It's Wrecking Ball Radio.
Shut up and entertain me.
There's no rules. There's no rules.
Holy sh! It's amazing.
I see her sarcasm and nastiness grow.
This is Davin's Den.
Everybody, you are listening to Davin's Den. Yes, Davin's Den, the show that is better than asbestos.
That's not saying much.
We set the bar really low to start.
That's the recurring guess. Okay. You can join the chat room by going to Davin'sDen.com and get me on here. Den Pen had it. I'm your host, Davin Rosenblatt, joined by Pip Helix.
Hi, everybody.
And in studio for the first time ever, Mr. Joe Bronzy.
How you doing, guys? Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming in, Joe.
Really, this is... your listeners don't know this. This is a state-of-the-art studio that we're sitting in. I'm feeling underdressed, as a matter of fact.
Well, that's because you're naked. That's the only way you could really feel out of breath.
If you're comfortable, I'm fine.
So, we like our guests to be really comfortable.
Joe Curry will be here as want to be later on, maybe in about an hour. So on the show, we are flush with Nazis. It's been so long since we did Nazi stuff.
I miss them.
We have a teacher who moonlights as a Nazi wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
We have Amazon that takes down a bunch of Nazi products.
Mm-hmm.
The GOP has a problem with Nazis.
Oops.
KKK's handing out candy to attract kids.
What?
President Trump allows his image to be used by a Russian asbestos company.
Isn't that nice?
That's Nazi-free, though, isn't it?
Well, Trump's involved, so...
Oh,
I
stand corrected.
There's my left-wing bias. Anyway, and we'll be playing a round-robin tournament of In the Barrel. Joe does not know In the Barrel, but I know Joe is a comedian, and Joe is very good at improv and thinking on his feet. So I know Joe is going to excel at that. We will explain that a little bit later. Happy to have Joe in. Joe's here to promote an album, and we're going to get to the album. He's got a lot of other exciting things going on. But, you know, we're just going to throw him right into this.
Let's call a little bullshit here.
Calling a little bullshit early.
Why are you looking at me?
Because you're usually where we're called bullshit.
You're across the table from him.
Oh, okay. No,
yes. So he's looking at you.
Oh, it's not about me.
Thank you for
explaining.
But I'm
sensing he's calling bullshit on me.
Yes.
On you?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what I'm, because he's looking at you, but he doesn't mean you. I'm the only one here other than you.
It could be anything.
I'm calling bullshit on Joe.
Okay. All right.
Lay it on me.
So Joe comes over with his lovely dog, Norman.
Oh,
what type
so
of dog is
cute.
It?
Shih Tzu.
A Shih Tzu.
17 pounds of ferocity.
Yes. Not a manly dog.
No. Not one you would describe as a masculine companion. No.
But I would argue that a pussy walks around with a pit bull. A real man walks around with a Shih Tzu.
I would say he's...
You know what? This is the nicest call bullshit I've ever had so far.
It's coming. So, it's
okay.
Coming.
No, he's actually... It proves he's secure in his masculinity.
Absolutely.
Any man with a poodle is secure in his
masculinity.
Listen,
if I'm a pussy, I'm walking around with a pit bull. The pit bull is going to defend me. If I'm secure in my manhood, I'm walking around with fucking Norman. Because he looks like if he had a big stick coming out of him, he'd be a fucking mop. So Joe Bronzy is very secure that he can hold down the perimeter. That shit's going to be okay. So I will give him credit for that.
All right.
And he's a good boy and gives kisses.
Oh, he's sweet.
And the dog's nice, too.
Yeah. Yes.
The comedy never starts. But here's where I'm calling bullshit.
Okay.
So Joe's got a trip coming up. And he's bringing
going to the Comedy Cabana in Myrtle Beach. There's a plug.
Well, that was quick.
There you go.
One plug.
So Joe's Joe's bringing Norman with him.
Yep.
Bringing Norman with him. So he's been on the phone with United, which I want to get into that hell shortly. Which, first of all, I don't know if Joe is braver or just doesn't give a shit about Norman, because United does not have a good track record with animals.
No, they don't.
But that aside, Joe assures me, no, it's okay. He's a service dog. What the fuck is this?
He's a service animal, so he will not be going in the cargo hold. He will not be going in the overhead bin or any of the other places. And listen, it's not just United. It's all the airlines.
Oh, they're terrible.
They're terrible.
Transporting live animals. It's not
meant. Well, they start out live.
Yeah. So Norman will be, as he always has been, on my lap. Norman was purchased as an ESA originally for my son, for my special needs son.
Oh,
Jake.
Now you're fucking ruining it.
No. He's my ESA now.
Okay.
So you're calling bullshit on me, not my son.
Not on your son.
Yeah, because all of a sudden that's
wow. Takes
boy.
The punch right out.
You know.
Although, it wouldn't be the first time I've made fun of somebody with special needs, but to do it to your son, I mean, that's...
No,
that's
not a special needs kid.
We got to get 3 hours out of Joe Bronzy just to go right into that.
I know.
That
is... I didn't sign up for the full 3 hours. I've got to get my balls tickled before I'm going to sit here for 3 hours. I thought maybe
Pip?
10 minutes.
I do all the work around here.
Only the ball tickling work.
Yeah, I know. That's
you
not
you know,
bad.
I've licked a clit or two to secure a guest. You do
yes.
what you got to do, Pip.
Yes.
Be a team
I'm
player.
A team player.
I'd just like to say hello to my fiance's grandparents who are tuning into the show right now.
Hi, fiance's grandparents.
He's a good boy.
I'm really...
You're gonna love him. Oh. He's a mensch. He's a good man. He has an adorable little dog. And he's got big bulging biceps. Your
all
granddaughter
right.
did very, very well. He's a good boy chick.
Very nicely done.
You're very welcome. Okay. Now, all right.
I've been nowhere near his balls.
He's an ESA for a special needs kid to begin with.
All right, so there I would go. Okay.
I'm all right with that.
I don't know what makes him different than another dog, though, to be completely honest.
Okay.
Training.
An ESA. Now, we're talking about a real emotional support animal. We're not talking about I want to scam the airlines and bring my emotional support peacock with me. Nonsense.
Actually, I brought a pipcock with me, and I said she was my emotional support animal, but she was way too ferocious and was foaming, so they didn't go through.
So.
Cack! Oh, sorry. they're very noisy.
No.
Your fiance's grandparents probably love that little shout-out.
They probably did. Yeah. So my son gets him. He's wonderful. He did receive some training in New York when we were in Queens, just to make sure he knew how to behave in public. He was good. He was good for relieving my son's stress and anxiety when he was really little.
Now, how does he do that? Because, like, most animals let you pet them.
Yeah. You know what? Most animals do let you pet them. Norman is very good. I think it's partly the breed and part of the training is sensing the anxiety. And he would go to my son and he would cuddle up with my son and my son would pet him. And that's,
so,
you know, that's pretty much
so
all
if
it
your
took.
Son is having
lowers
an emotional
blood pressure.
If your son's having an emotional episode, if Norman's around, he will go to your son.
He'll pretty much prevent it. He would. Now, this is my son is much younger. So now, fast forward to the divorce, which began in 2011, and my ex gets a pit bull because that's a great dog to have around small children, as we know in the news. Listen,
I know a lot of people who have pit bulls with small children, and the dogs are really good
and they're
around.
Fine.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Not that was, but I think my ex did it to bother me more than any other reason.
Well, that's why she's your ex. Yeah.
Of all the breeds.
So what happens, Norman's going back and forth. He's for my son. He's my son's ESA. He's got dogs don't imprint, but the dog thinks he's mine because I feed him and I take
sure.
care of him.
Sure. Right, you're the leader of the pack.
But he's for my son, so he goes back and forth until the pit bull attacks Norman, picks him up by his head, and I think Norman saw the light at the end of the tunnel for a minute there.
Oh, my God.
Spoke to experts, two vets, and somebody at the ASPCA.
So let me ask you, is the next step getting Norman an emotional support animal?
Man, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
It busted up everything because the experts say you want to keep two dogs from fighting? Keep them apart. End of story.
Right.
So now the dog can't go in my ex's house. Now my kids think I kidnapped their dog because I won't let it go back with
man.
Them to their mothers. Meanwhile, my daughter is there trying to separate a pit bull from a pit bull's victim. Meanwhile, dog's never been aggressive with anybody else. Never been anybody
just
else.
Just doesn't
to
like
be
Norman.
Fair. Nope. Norman thought he was the alpha dog. Norman tried to, you know, to cow a pit bull.
Norman's got a little peshy in him.
Oh, he does.
Yeah, yeah he does.
Love that dog. So he's rotten. You know, they call him lion dogs, and he thinks he's the alpha dog.
Right. Oh, I say.
Until he's a chew toy for a bigger dog.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of stress, a lot of angst. I'm talking about what I was talking about with you on stage. Woman comes up to me after the show. I'm also talking about insomnia, which I'm beginning to really suffer from during the divorce. Fall asleep, piece of cake, gone, out. Wake up about 45 minutes later, and that's all she wrote for the night. That's it.
Your mind starts racing.
Yep.
start thinking of, of anything I got to get done or pressure or whatever, it's over.
Oh, God.
And you know, Dav, we drive overnight. Mm-hmm. Yep. We drive for long stretches.
Yep.
I can't get back from work. Took me once. I came back from Pittsburgh, 5-hour drive and make it overnight easily. It took me about 12 hours because I kept feeling like I got to pull over. I'm going to fall asleep.
Yeah.
Now, the 5-hour energy, that doesn't work for you?
It had before, but when you go 3-4 days with about 45 minutes worth of sleep, nothing chemicals working. You know?
Yeah, you start doing the head drop really quickly. Yeah. It's like, open the window. The car's too warm. You know,
I'll be like slapping my face.
Yeah, I've had to do that.
Yeah, it's rough.
And
when
I get, I mean, I had a cousin fall asleep behind the wheel, wreck his car. So when I get close to feeling like this is, I just pull over.
That's a smart move.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm talking about this on stage. A woman comes up to me and says, is that true with insomnia that you're having trouble? I said, yeah. She said, I'm a therapist. That's my specialty. I said, no kidding. She said, why don't you come see me? We'll talk about it. I said, because I'm going through a divorce. I can't afford you. I don't even know what your rate is. I can't afford you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can't even afford this conversation. Here's $5. Please walk away before I go further into debt. And she said, no, you really made me laugh. You get at least one session free. Come see me.
Oh, that's nice.
Wow.
Yeah. She was really great. So I went, I had I told her everything I told you basically, but the long form on the divorce and the hatred and the angst. And she said, what about, has your son ever had trouble sleeping? And I said, a couple times, that's not his main issue. She said, what do you do when he can't sleep? I said, well, Norman sleeps with me. So I would bring him in, my son would pet him and go right out. She goes, so he sleeps with you? I said, yeah, but my body, he drives him to the end of the bed. You know, he starts on my chest. And she said, well, I'll tell you what. Next time you wake up after 45 minutes, an hour, 3 hours, whatever, call him back up to you, you know, and see if petting him helps at all. It never occurred to me. I get up. I'm aggravated. I can't sleep. I pace. I try and write. You know,
What about jerking off? I mean, seriously. I mean, that's a quick way to knock people out.
You know what? I'll be honest with you. It's supposed to release endorphins and make you sleepy.
Yeah.
Believe me, I tried everything, including alcohol, medication. I'm sure I tried that remedy a time or two.
You have to get drunk before you jerk off?
No, no. Oh. No. Oh, if I'm drunk, I miss. I'm very, I need to be focused. That's not gonna work.
You don't want to cheat yourself.
Harvey and Charlotte, if you turn it off, I won't be upset. So, at any rate.
We'll do serious stuff soon.
She said to me, if it works, if it helps you at all, I'll certify Norman as your ESA. And I was as skeptical as you were when you called bullshit earlier. I'm like, petting a dog is not going to make any difference.
But it does make a difference. Petting animals does
make
a difference.
Yeah. I know it lowers your blood pressure.
Yeah.
When I tell you that first time I thought of it, because the week after that, a couple times I had insomnia, it was never even occurred to me. Because I'm tired, I'm fried, I'm not thinking.
The last thing you're thinking is, let me get the dog over here.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So when I thought of it, like a week later, and I called him up, I don't even remember petting him. Knocked me out. And I will say about 8 times out of 10 when I do, and life is different now, things are much better for me, but 8 times out of 10 when I have that insomnia problem, he helps. He puts me right back to sleep.
So is that why Norman's going with you to Myrtle Beach?
And pretty much everywhere.
So now he goes with you all over the place.
He goes with me all over the place, yeah. I still wish he could be with my daughter and my son, you know, but he can't. Because they still have the pit bull that will kill Norman sooner or later. So Norman's with me, and
but the pit bull, the pit bull's probably helping your kids. I mean,
I hope so.
It's their dog.
Sunshine, it's a female pit bull, and as far as I know, she's sweet with everybody.
Right.
Never had another incident.
Mm.
So,
all right.
So she's just dog aggressive.
Well, we certainly
Norman aggressive.
Norman aggressive.
We certainly hope Norman survives United.
Oh, he'll be on my lap. It'll
That's not comfortable either. I feel like Norman deserves better. I fly United. It's not a good experience. I feel like Norman is a value.
You know what?
But the dog.
I don't have a problem with United. American Airlines stranded me at Miami Airport recently. I'm not so high on American.
I don't even fly America. Where does American go?
A lot of
go the Midwest. They go Chicago, right? I feel
Chicago.
Like I've flown them when I have to head out to Chicago.
I don't even remember where I was using them to fly back, but I got stranded at the Miami Airport overnight. And it was miserable and brutal. The pilot was nice. Everybody else, no use for it.
Did he give you a pair of like little wings that they give the kids?
No, but he held me while I cried.
That's nice, because Norman wasn't there, so. Now all you need to do is be held by a pilot or Norman. That's right.
Yeah. He's Did you get that guy's pilot. Number?
What? No. Oh. He was married. His wife doesn't know, so I won't say his name.
Oh, okay.
But so...
A little experimentation so you, while you fly is fine.
So are you still calling bullshit? You have that right. You have that right. Every time I fly, man, every time I see another ESA... by the way, an ESA, there is no vest. They don't cut. If somebody got an ESA vest for their animal, they bought it online, and I'm thinking I'm about 75% sure it's because.
Yeah, but I got one of those for my daughter. They just look cool.
Exactly.
They just look cool. Yeah.
Exactly. You strap her in a little ESA vest?
I do.
You never She's put your daughter in a harness, did you? You never put her on a leash?
Not that type of show. Okay. no, my mom used to have me on a leash.
You were a leashed child?
I was a leashed child.
I'm calling bullshit on your mom.
Are you
I
serious?
I agree.
You were on a leash?
Yes. This is not news. I've mentioned this before.
I do not remember this.
Because you don't listen when I talk.
No. What?
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, when I was a little kid. Not in the past 5 years.
Oh, thank God.
Past 5 years, I'm too strong. I'll break her fucking wrist.
See, I'm not a fan of that. Putting your kid on a leash.
But then again, you know what? We did have my daughter, not on a leash per se, but we she was young. We would go to Disney. And Disney's very crowded, as everybody knows. So she had it was a monkey backpack.
Okay.
And it had like a long monkey tail.
Oh, so you're
hanging
out to the
tail. So I guess it's kind of a leash. But, you know, in big crowds, if she doesn't want to hold hands, what are you going to do?
Yeah, see, well, that's... you know what? No, this is the kind of show I can say. I totally call bullshit, man. Like, Joe...
Oh, this is the type of show?
Let's bring up...
The other podcast you wouldn't call bullshit on that?
A friend of ours, because I'm going to paraphrase a routine of his.
Okay.
His routine was very simple. His daughter says... Joe Starr.
Okay.
Right? His daughter says to him, Justine, Dad, I want a cell phone. Why? What if you need to get a hold of me? He says, Justine. She says, what? He says, see how that works? What if my kid doesn't want to hold my hand? What? You walk within arm length of me or you're in trouble. I'm the parent.
Yeah,
I'm
but
the
you know
boss.
What? You know what? Let me tell you something. 85 fucking degree heat, 90% humidity, bunch of people running around. My parents, my wife, my fucking kid, 3-4-year-old. You know what? If I could save myself a little aggravation of crying... Get the fucking monkey backpack. I don't got time to deal with this shit. Because you know what? If she starts crying, somebody's getting fucking knocked out, and it's probably going to be her. So the monkey backpack saved everybody.
So not only are you advocating leashing children,
I'm not advocating it. I'm not advocating
it. It worked for you, is what you're saying.
She's still present. She wasn't stolen.
Okay. All right.
Listen, Mr. Shih Tzu, you better relax. I see what you're walking around with. At least I could go to bed without touching a furry thing. I prefer to
listen. I don't, yeah,
going to bed
I'm
and
not
touching
so sure
a furry
that.
Thing has been around for thousands and thousands of years.
It certainly has.
So, it works
so you,
for me.
So you don't think leashing is okay?
I don't think because it already presupposes that you don't have the authority over your child to control them with your voice, your commands, your... Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't command that much respect for them. You command respect for your daughter.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He's adorable.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, kind of no.
Not at all, really? Yeah, Maybe it's because he leashed her when she was younger.
No, he didn't leash her. He just monkeyed her.
Listen,
no,
I'm telling
you
right
you know
now.
What? Actually, my daughter, she's a good kid. She's a pain in the ass, but she's a good kid. Yeah, because I don't really get that mad very often.
Did she need that much correction? Like, I'm leash aside, whatever. Like I'm blessed. My two kids, both of them, were not miserable or rotten in public.
No,
they weren't. You know what I mean? Like,
no,
never,
I
like
mean,
I can't control them.
But you know what? Little kids, 3-4 years old, they want to go run and explore. And Disney's just packed. It wasn't like when we were going to the mall that she was leashed. But you know,
okay. But Disney.
So it was only under that circumstance.
Yes, under that
the monkey backpack.
Yeah. Like when you're in a wide open, crowded place,
and they're like looking at everything is the candy store
because there's just too
much
going on at Disney when they're that small.
And they want to just go
and they don't and they don't want to be in a stroller at that age.
They want to run for it
exactly. Oh. And she wasn't on the leash the whole time. She wasn't on the leash the whole time, but. Look at me fucking justifying myself.
Well, you know, now...
Did we turn that bullshit around or what?
We most certainly did.
We talked about it when you were out of the room before the show.
I am so proud of you that you turned him completely around.
Oh, no, I'm still calling bullshit on him.
What? Why?
He's got to do a road gig with his doggy because he can't sleep. Nobody fucking sleeps on the road.
You know what? I think that's great that he found a...
I'm glad that he found a cure.
Man, that doctor... Hertz was amazing, man. I'm very lucky. I didn't know what I was going to do. And I, to be completely honest with you, I looked at people who suffered, quote unquote, from insomnia. I didn't think that was
a thing.
You know what I mean? No, it really is. I had no idea.
Yeah, people. No, well, no. Okay. But my father did, and
your husband does with the fucking device you got strapped onto you.
No,
she got a CPAP.
Oh, you have a CPAP. You're a Darth Vader fighter pilot.
I am. I am. I'm a MiG. Fighter pilot, though.
MiG. Please. Only the president can use those type of words. We don't use those words here.
I am so glad. You know what? That was really funny. Let me pause for a second. Let's not just roll right past that.
Thank you.
I'm really glad you have the CPAP on. Yeah. A friend of mine works as a comic, works the cruise ships.
Okay.
And they just had a passenger pass away. Just from sleep apnea. 40
yeah.
No, it's
years
a serious
old.
Thing too. But you know what? Yeah. This is how we're devolving as human beings.
Yeah.
I got a leash, a kid. He can't get a good night's sleep without petting a dog. You can't breathe on your own. This is how we're devolving as human beings.
There are kids dropping dead from peanuts. You're completely right.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Completely
this is right. Why we have to cage them so we can keep an eye on them. The president's absolutely right. Cage those kids. We're doing them a favor. Thank you, President Trump.
Yeah, we're becoming allergic to ourselves.
Yes.
You know, I mean, everything is so toxic.
I bet there is an epidermis allergy.
I bet there is. I mean,
oh my God, that's horrible.
Can
that's
you imagine?
Horrible that you said it just made it come into existence in this world.
Yeah, you know that's true.
Yeah, and the kids got to peel themselves.
Ah.
By the way, have you heard the alternate dimension Bernstein Bears theory? Have you heard this?
No.
I don't watch
internet
Jewish
thing.
Bears.
I'm not
a fan.
The children's book is Bernstein Bears. That's
I know the
book.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. 9 out of 10 people will say it's the Bernstein Bears.
Okay.
And when you show them, they're like, no, that's not the book I grew up with. Now, this is all crap.
Right.
But there is an alternate dimension theory saying that things like that, there's about a dozen in pop culture, that people are remembering differently in vast majorities because it was different. Now, my fiance is vulnerable to these theories. She finds them very interesting. I find them crap. However, on top of that...
But as somebody who's been married for a while, you better learn to find that shit interesting, my friend.
Oh, no. I find it interesting, but I can't buy it. I can't see
Then you better learn to fake it.
Are you handy at all?
I am a little handy, a little fixed.
Could you put a doghouse together from a kit?
Yeah.
Okay,
absolutely,
good.
100%.
Do that. Be prepared.
She's saying that's where you'll be sleeping with Norman.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
It's a long way to get there, but I knew where
from
she was
from a kit?
Going.
Okay, yeah. All right. I followed you. I went around. That was a nice...
Pips and jokes, they're journeys. And sometimes they're worth it, and sometimes you just wish you'd get eaten by the Wicked Witch on the way. You never know, but you take the journey.
He wishes that he took a U-turn and completely did not follow me on any of them.
No, sometimes I enjoy them.
Sometimes you do? Okay.
Sometimes I do, but I'm always captive. And by the way, we just glossed over the fact, Mazel Tov, as people of the Semitic faith would say, on your engagement. We just glossed right over that.
Thank you very much. Congratulations. Yeah, engaged in March, got engaged at Woodlock Pond. A resort that I happen to work. I've been working there for 12 years. She came a lot with me.
Who books it?
So she came, yeah. The band leader, entertainment director, Joey Casella, who's been in show business longer than you and I, my friend, have known what show business is. He knows everybody.
Okay.
He knew Sammy Davis Jr. He's not that old, but I mean, he has, since he was crawling, this guy, Joey Casella, was in show business. And
so you tell your wonderful fiance, I'm going to leave the dog at home.
Okay.
Come with me. I'm working.
No. Are you kidding? Of course he came with me.
Oh.
Of course Norman was there when we got engaged.
Oh.
Always.
He's family.
Here's what I did. I told her, listen, we're going to have this romantic weekend, but I got a private gig at Woodlock. You know Woodlock. We got to do that Friday night to throw her off because she's smarter than I am. How am I going to surprise her? We've been together for 6 years at this point.
She knows the drill.
She knows it's coming.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we go there. I tell her I got to do a sound check. And she understands. She's not really a civilian. She's like, yeah, sound check for a comic is check one. Are we done? Are we
finished? Yeah, we kind of like whenever they say we have to come early for a sound check because it's like an hour and a half before we'd get there. We're always like, do we have to? Hmm. Why?
Yeah.
Unless like you have a guitar, which Joe doesn't have and I don't have.
Right.
You're like, why the fuck? It's just our voice.
Just turn it on.
Yeah.
Just turn it on.
Yeah.
If there are seniors, no reverb.
And by
and
the way,
done.
Doing the sound check does not guarantee that the sound will work properly an hour and a half later when the show starts.
No, because it's like a magical property, and I've learned this from doing sound for shows for you. You set it up, Sounds great. They get up there and it's like, oh God. And what am I going to do? Jump up there and monkey around with it and throw off his pace? No, can't. Just suffer along.
Well, anyway, as well they should. So your girlfriend at the time thinks you're going down for the sound check.
Right. Go into the theater. And I did not know this, but the staff of the place was up in the balcony. Everybody'd heard about it, friends, because I know them, like family. So they're all there. Theater is, the theater's got, like, work lights on in the audience, right?
Yeah.
No lights on stage. I'm up there going, check, check, check. Is this sound right? Is this sound right? And she's like, yeah, it sounds okay. I said, no, there's something wrong. Come here. As soon as she steps on the stage, the house lights go out, spotlights come on, our song starts playing through the theater. The photographer I had hiding starts taking pictures.
Oh, that's
nice. Nice.
And what Norman,
that's a man who's been engaged before and now wants to do it correctly.
Precisely.
Wants to do it better.
Exactly.
He's got something to prove now.
And Norman is on the stage sniffing and eating the confetti, paying no attention to what's going on.
That's
going
to be fun poop to clean up later.
So what I meant to say to her was, I remember very carefully very clearly what I meant to say was, I'm proposing on stage because most of my life this is the only place I felt at home, but then I met you. You
Aww.
Became my home, right?
Aww.
And you opened up the whole world to me. That's what I meant to say.
Isn't that
That's
sweet?
Very nice.
But my panties are moist.
But what I did say was, I fell apart.
No.
Did you?
I got choked up. No, I said it, but I got choked up.
You talk
up.
For a living.
You're
an actor.
I know.
This
I know,
is the easy shit. We're not asking you to open a pickle jar. This is the easy shit. This is what we do. If you say, I struggled opening a pickle jar, I go, man, I feel you. But we talk.
Yeah. I got through it. All I got right. it across.
Was
I
she completely did. Surprised?
She was surprised it happened then, yeah. Okay. I caught her.
Oh.
Went back to where we were staying, and then there was family there she didn't expect to see.
Oh, very nice.
Buddy Fitzpatrick, our friend, brother in comedy, was there with champagne.
Didn't know you were that close to him.
Oh, yeah. He's going to be best man at my wedding.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yep. Oh, that's awesome.
Well, I see, like, Buddy, like, once every 10 years, so it's not like I'm going to interview him. Hey, how do you know Bronzy? That's not going to come up in the interview.
Right.
I've known Buddy since I started out. He started out a little before me, and I loved... He had a routine about a spider coming down when you're driving in a car. You're driving. Right. It's terrifying,
yes.
right? And he's
yes.
trying to blow it away, and it's coming back to him.
Yes.
And he's doing the spider with his hand. Hilarious, right?
Excuse me, yeah.
And I remember telling him... You know, young comic, how'd you come up with that? I think that's brilliant. And he said, I kind of came up with it on stage. And I remember just starting out a couple of years going, I'll never be able to do that. I have to plan everything out. I have to know everything. Now, half my comedy album was just what I came up with in the moment.
The album that's coming out now?
Yeah, half of it is
what's
improvisational.
It called?
It's called Milking Almonds.
Milking Almonds. What does that mean?
Well, I do a bit about my fiancé's mother is a vegan.
Okay.
And what I say is, you know, I never dealt with a vegan before. I never ate vegan food, so I walked in her house. I remembered there she was milking almonds, which is weird because almonds is her husband. And it just goes south
now,
from there.
Now, when you've done a lot. You do a lot of radio promoting, whether it's club dates or, in this case, your album.
Yes.
I've done a lot of radio stuff. Do you like when they... when they want you to come in and do shtick?
Nope.
Or when you just hang out?
When I hang out.
Yeah, I like that too.
I like that better.
I hate when they want me to... The worst is call in and do shtick. But even just to be there and do shtick, I just hate it. It just doesn't work.
Well, and then... I've done a couple of the old school ones, especially when I opened for David Brenner, and we had a DJ. Now, David's on the air. You don't need me. David always wanted to include me and ask me a couple questions. Really good, because it was good practice for me.
Sure.
But this DJ went through it with David and was annoying David. And then did the same thing with me is, what are some of your bits? Oh, I do a bit about my girlfriend's mom being a vegan. Okay, all right. Can I go into it like this? No, I don't want to go into my bit with you, dude. I just want to talk to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if it comes up naturally like it just did with the milk
right,
and almonds,
then you could do
the name,
yeah.
I'll give you a couple lines from
right.
it. But... It's so canned.
But give the audience a taste. Let them know what they're in for if they come and see you this weekend.
Oh, it's like that feeling when you're introduced to somebody and somebody says, oh, they do stand-up. And they're like, oh, tell me a joke. It's like, oh,
but
God.
It's even worse because we still have the expectation that they're in show business with us.
Yeah.
But they really can't do, a lot of them can't do what we do.
Right.
For every Howard Stern, most of them, I don't have a comparison. That was...
Howard Stern on the one side is great, but on the other side, most of them are Davin Rosenblatt. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, no. But
that wasn't where I was going to go.
Out,
I think
it didn't
hurtful,
come out well for Davin.
And I'm supposed to help promote his album.
I know.
I don't think I want to now. Goodbye, Joe.
Gloves are off, Joe.
Right, he'll fit right
in. Norman.
So let me.
You better get Norman here because here it comes.
No. Media is changing. Like, you know, 10 years ago, people put out CDs and DVDs.
Yes.
Now a lot of the comics are. Put it on you. I've seen USB drives that they sell after shows.
Yep.
I see streaming. What did you decide to do?
Drop cards. And
what's a drop card?
A drop card is well, you know what? 800-pound gorilla is the label, and they do a drop card. It looks like a backstage pass.
Okay,
made up similar to the album cover. Right.
Right.
I give it to you. It's got a down. Go to this website. Here's your download code. You download the album.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's available on iTunes and all these different places. Here's your, it's called a drop card.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and they said to me, do you want to just have drop cards? And I said, no, you know what? Because there are still, my demographic's pretty wide, as you know. I have older crowds that want something physical.
I think most people, I think even the younger people, even though they don't really listen to CDs, I think they still want something physical.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've crossed, because it's been going on for years, comics, that I see them selling like the USB thing. I think they feel like it's not as valuable for whatever. Even though it's the same show, they feel like they're missing out.
They're missing out.
Plus, you know, it's really cool for a comic because I have reached no real level of celebrity, but
well, I think tonight
show,
changes it. I think
yeah,
tonight.
No, till tonight.
Yeah,
till tonight.
Tomorrow morning.
I'm still trying to make up to you for the
check your MySpace page.
There's a MySpace page.
Yeah, I saw you buttering that toast.
So, but there's still there are people that say, you know, will you sign it? And I try and write something funny, maybe that pertains to the show or pertains to them.
Right.
You know what I mean? Personalize it. And
thanks for coming,
cool
Big
connection.
Nose. That,
oh, no.
You
enjoy saggy tits now.
No. Oh!
Joe doesn't do that.
No.
That's not my
but
thing.
No, but this way you can sign. So you're going to do both. You're going to offer CDs.
And drop cards.
Now, have you started selling them after shows yet?
No. The pre-release for the album just started today. I think today is the pre-release for the album, which means you can order it online and get two tracks right away. And
well, we're
going to
play
first.
A track. How could people order it?
They can go. It's going to the 21st, I think it is, through my Facebook page, Joe Bronzy Comedian, or iTunes.
Okay.
It's going to be on iTunes and through my website, joebronzy.com. Thank you for asking.
And of course, if they see your show, you'll have them with you then, too?
Absolutely, I will.
All right, let's play a track from the album. Now, you said it's a lot of improv, because that's what I was going to ask you. Every time I see you, I know you have material, but we often don't get to it.
Well, my fiance made the suggestion to me on the cruise ships where we met. She's like, you know what? Because at that point in 2011 or so, I would literally decide how I felt on stage in the moment. So I could do a half hour, 45 minutes of material, or I could do a half hour, 45 minutes of improv,
right?
And or some kind of mix. But usually, to be honest with you, I would go into a mode. So a show would either be material or improv, right? And that's where I was at. And she said, you know, I notice every show you do, people leave and say, oh, I loved your material, or, oh, I love that you talk with the crowd and you just make it up. She's like, so why don't you please them all and do both in each show? Why don't you split it half and half? And it's so simple, but it was like a thunderclap.
Now, let me ask you this. I have found this at times. You are exceptional at crowd work, one of the best working, honestly, at crowd work.
Thank you.
And you have very good material, too. But I have found, at least in my experience, it's not always, sometimes the material, if you just come out with the crowd work for the first 5, 10, 15, 20, however long it is, and you're just hammering it with crowd work, and they're like, okay, I'm going to take my foot off the gas, I'm going to go into my material now. Sometimes the best material can't even follow it. Have you found that?
Sometimes. You're setting it up perfectly, man. Sometimes I am hard to follow. You know what I mean? For me.
And he's so modest,
just for
too.
Me. Just for me. No, I'm hard to follow.
Because
you're totally right.
Because when you make
I can't follow myself.
But you can't, because the easiest laughs to get are when you're making it about them.
Yes.
The hardest ones to get are when you're making it about yourself. The ones in the middle are when you talk about general topics.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, when you focus right on the audience like that, there's another comic like that. You know Rich Carucci? You know Rich.
I know Rich, sure.
Yeah. Rich does great crowd work, too. A much heavier hand with his crowd work than you do. He's nicknamed the Steamroller for a reason. He is...
Ow.
He's like the pit bull in Norman. I mean, he will just...
Oh, he's the show that people go, I don't want to sit in the front row.
No, he's not.
So
he's
the
not
comedian
that,
picks
he's
on me.
He's not that bad.
Oh, the steamroller?
He's not. No, he's not. No, he's not that bad. But okay. He will go at people. Not where like they walk out and they're upset with him. But he's got a heavier touch than Joe does.
Okay.
But then, so he'll do that for like 20 minutes or so.
Right.
And then all of a sudden he shuts that off. Mm-hmm. And he goes right to material.
Mm-hmm.
And there's such a disconnect I find sometimes. So that Joe's fiance's observation is point. Give them both. If you can mix it in and do it both, where you can give them material and crowd work. It's probably the best way to do it.
Well, it works for me. I love her for that. There's a couple different things.
Is that in the vows?
I'll nice. Put that in there. That's funny.
Yeah.
But
I love you, and here's a writer's credit.
See, sometimes you take the journey and it pays off.
That was good.
That was good. Nice. See?
Thanks.
Now I finally figured it out. It took me long into the right.
Listen, this is early.
But 35 minutes, and there it is. There's the reason shining through.
I have a slow burn.
No, that's just a rash, dear.
Oh, God. And I need an ointment or something.
Yeah, no.
It's terrible.
You know, she's indicating on her body where she needs the ointment. I wish you guys could see this.
She was actually indicating
the one spot where she doesn't need the ointment.
I touched my ass. I did.
Oh.
What? I did. Right
okay,
here.
Okay, you're gross now.
I grabbed a cheek.
But no, but so you figured out a way to intertwine it.
Yeah, but I will also, too, I don't know if you find this, because you're a veteran doing this, you look for
code word for old.
If we were famous, right? But we're in your basement right now, so we're
hey,
old.
It's
you
a
know
state
what?
Of the art
know
basement.
What? This basement is not flooded, so I think that should count for something.
No, you know what? But I say that as a compliment. You're a veteran. You've been doing it long enough.
Yeah.
We look for ways to challenge ourselves sometimes.
Yes.
And for me... I do prefer, although I do mix it up and sometimes I go back and forth in and out, I do prefer to start with a little bit of local stuff that I've made up that night. You know what I mean? Like observations
so you're not
of the town.
You're not, hey, it's great to be here in Middletown, New York, gateway to Suffern, New York. You're not doing that, are
no,
you?
No, you know what? There's not a lot of that. I don't...
Thank God.
Not really, no. I mean, I have my own... there's a piece that I like to do if it's a dark and woodsy place, but that's a Joe Bronzi original. Do you know what I mean? But I've done the dark
right,
and woodsy place
because
I play in a few of them.
Right. No. So you, yes, you. So it's a staple of your act. It's not a staple of everybody's act.
No,
you know,
absolutely.
a staple of everybody's act is you give them the name of a town, which is Indian for, say, shithole or something. That's like a staple of everybody's act, gateway.
Right.
That's a, or, you know, my agent.
This is a great town. I hope they finish it soon.
Yes. You know, tonight I was supposed to be, my agent called me, and I was supposed to be in Atlantic City, but I said, no, I need to be in Goshen, New York.
Right.
Those are staples of everybody's act.
I like to do my observations of the town or the venue or the stage or the whatever.
Right.
Then I move into, let me talk to you guys. I tell them, look, I'm not an insult comic.
You're not. You're very nice. You're very nice.
But you know why that is, man? It's because I was an overweight kid with thick glasses and a big vocabulary in elementary school. Between elementary school to the senior year of high school, I had more fights than Mike Tyson did professionally.
Okay.
Wow.
I got picked on, and it was miserable. And if I talk to somebody in the audience sometimes, especially a heavyset person, I'll turn to them, I'll start to talk, and I see them hunch, waiting for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because that's the easy way to go. I don't like that stuff.
That's not my style, and I also feel obligated to make that person feel really good and comfortable.
Yeah, so you get them an extra dessert. You're a nice man.
Oh.
I've seen you do it. What? No? No?
He had to.
He's got a...
Oh, I never said I'm nice.
No. Nobody ever said that you were.
No, like, if you do degrees of niceness to an audience, if you take Joe... Bronzi, myself, and Rich Carucci. Joe is the nicest.
Okay.
I'm in between.
Mm-hmm.
Rich Carucci.
Okay. All right,
Would you
do that scale. Yeah, you absolutely could. Yes. Yeah. But I've never seen you be...
cruel.
You know what? Sometimes cruelty is because the intellect or the humor is not very strong.
Mm-hmm.
You have a very... good intellect, so there's never lazy cruelty in what you say.
Somebody wants to come back to the basement.
You know
what I mean? We appreciate
that's right.
That.
Yeah. That's right. I got two bottles of water. I thought I was only in for one. Now
you have as much water as you want. No, I don't like. I will be a dick to an audience member if they're a dick to me.
Right.
But other than that, no. I don't really want to be mean to somebody. I don't really get off on that, and I kind of think it's easy.
It is easy. It is easy.
Yeah.
To, you know.
But you don't go for cruel.
No, no, most, no. Most when I do crowd work, if I'm messing around with somebody, it's because they said something.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, now we're off.
Yeah.
And if you're going to say something that's going to give me material, well, that's on you.
Right.
Oh, there's no limits to what I will say if somebody is making other people not enjoy themselves. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Right.
Oh, I've been very rude. And
oh,
unforgiving.
Good.
So this track, what are we going to listen to?
I don't remember what I sent you. No, it's an imaginary boyfriend that I sent
you. Yes,
imaginary
you sent
boyfriend.
Me imaginary boyfriend.
Okay, this is me discovering this girl I'm talking to in the crowd. This is me just discovering her, getting to know her, and going off on a tangent.
Okay.
And what I like to do is I set it up as, no, that's the reality. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? When I decide that she's making up a boyfriend because she feels I'm hitting on her,
mm-hmm.
that becomes the basis of
See,
wherever I go.
I listen to this, and to me, it's very indicative of your style. You know, I'm like, I could be in the club right now watching Joe work. So if people, because sometimes, you know, when you put something on an album, it's different than seeing it live, and seeing it live is always better.
Mm-hmm.
But this track is very, for lack of a better word, authentic. So if you don't get to see Joe live and you just can download it from iTunes or whatever, this will give you a feel of what his shows are.
And you're not single, are you?
No.
Are you? No, you're not. I'm not hitting on you. This is my job. You understand? I told you all at the beginning of the show I'm in love with a Canadian that she totally put the wall up. She's like, no. No, thank you. We go for, like, you know, government work, not joke monkey over here. All right, so where is your imaginary boyfriend tonight? Where is he? The one you made up to keep me at bay. Where is he tonight? Is he an astronaut, maybe? They have a 7-month training program in Nova Scotia. Where is your boyfriend tonight? Where is he?
He actually lives up the street.
He lives up the street. And he's not here. Does he live up the street whenever you tell the story? In case I'm really creepy and you'll text him any second? He'll be here in a minute, mister. He lives up the street. He owns a gym up the street, mister. He's enormous. He's 7'5". He lives up the street, but he couldn't be here tonight. How come why?
He's too broke.
He's too broke? Well, now I feel really bad. Because he still probably has more money than a comedian. He couldn't come to the show tonight. You know what? Call him on your cell phone. Give me your phone. Call him on your cell phone. Well, I know it's off for the show. You may, there's the only exception. Turn it on. Give me your cell phone. Call him and we're going to give him a little part of the show. Come on. Nobody else hand me your phone. Keep your phones to yourself. Like, dude, call my ex-girlfriend. Call my ex-girlfriend. You have my permission. Call my ex-girlfriend. She's for real. What is his? I want to collect some data. What is his name?
It's John.
Is he currently employed? It's okay if you're not. Is he currently employed? He is. What does he do?
He works for the government.
He works for the government. Wait a minute. Your story's falling apart again. It's falling apart again. He's a student and he works part-time. What is he majoring in? What is he going to do?
In marketing.
In marketing. Okay. All right. I need to talk to him. What's his name again?
John.
Okay, that's my brother's name. I'll remember his name. We need to say hello to John this evening. We're going to cut this whole waiting period out of here. Maybe get the next edition of the iPhone before the next show. Don't you have him on speed dial? If you're going to pretend to have a boyfriend, you should put him in your favorites. It's down there, John Mitchell. You know what? I notice you have in your auto dial, you have a lot of hearts by Mom, not so many by John. That's a little problem in the relationship.
He deserves some kind of emoji, even a little cute little penis waving at you. Well, we're going to help him with his self-esteem. Hold on. Is he? Well, I really hope I don't. He doesn't pick up and I hear that he's in a strip club. I'd feel really bad. Shh, don't give it away. You mind your own business. I got this by myself. I will handle this. I want to just make sure there's nothing that's going to break them up before I put on speaker. He's not answering. It's just a random John you had in your phone. On behalf of the entire crowd, we're very disappointed in you right now. Gentlemen, how are you? Gentlemen, what's your relationship, the two of you?
Childhood friends, man.
Do you know these two childhood friends, or that's just a coincidence, or there was a childhood friends section in the club?
It's a childhood friends club up here.
Okay, so you know these two guys too?
Yeah.
Okay, you all know each other. Like this, this is like half the gang that was in It. This is really cool. Okay. All right, fair enough. Very cool. You know what? Seriously, honest to God, guys, again, just compliments. Your four childhood friends that all ended up good looking, that just doesn't happen. Usually there's one of them that's like, yeah. You know what I mean? Usually one, and you're like, no, we gotta take Butch out. We gotta get him a date. You know what I mean? No pressure whatsoever, just all four of them are real. All four of them are real. Just think about it, just think about it. If she called you, would you answer? If she called you, would you answer? You say, yay, yeah, see? See? Do you feeling all pressured because she's getting married? No, just live your life. Don't make up boyfriends. It's all right. I'm kidding. I'm sure he's real and cheating on you. I'm pretty sure. He's pretty sure. We're just helping people tonight. Look, this guy's burying his head in his hands. He's like, this is a debacle. This is terrible. This is awful. I know, John, you didn't need to say that. This is terrible. I should have kept it right here for when he calls back.
See, so you're nice. You're not a prick.
I try not to be.
No,
I try not to be.
It's nice.
You know why? Because when I was I'm the oldest of seven. When we were little kids, I was the shittiest older brother.
Really?
Awful to my younger siblings. Yep.
Well, maybe
you're guilt, Catholic guilt for that stuff.
Well, were you taking the stuff you were getting, all the stick you were getting at school back home?
But that's not an excuse. I bullied. Oh.
Yeah. No, ugh. That's
sounds presidential.
It's not an excuse, but it's a pattern.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Look at you. I like the little psychoanalysis.
That was well turned, that phrase. That was
Pitt
well said.
Thank you. Certain things to the table. Not all at once, not every show. But they come to the table, and they stick
it's
out.
It's usually bacteria.
I got one of the funny females.
You did.
I got one of the funny. She can hang. She's very good, this Pippi looks. We'll keep her. She's been on a 7-year probationary period. But
the announcement's coming tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
You're going to be kept.
Listen, after 7 years of your performance, I feel very comfortable in saying that we can extend the probation another 6 months and see how it goes. I feel very confident.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah. Yes. So. You can continue to come here and work for what you work for.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. I was hoping for a raise, but no.
No.
Yeah.
Unless you could get Joe here on time. If you can do that, then I will give you a raise.
I can't move heaven and earth.
No, you can't. So how long have you been doing this?
20 years now. Okay. Professionally. 20 years professionally. As an MC.
You know what I mean? Because
I did Bringers for 2.5 years before that.
But
and
I think
almost
that counts.
Quit.
I think that counts. Mm,
you know what?
You're still getting you're still doing your chops.
Yeah, man. You know what?
You're still a comic.
Yeah, but even if I look back at what not knowing what I was doing on stage, like I feel like I started to have an idea what it meant to be a comic. I'm not saying it was a good comic, but what it meant to be a comic about 20 years ago. You know, because doing Bringers is a very isolated, very different craft.
For those who don't know what Bringers are, it's when the talent has to bring the audience in order to perform.
Yeah, bring six friends for 6 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's a completely artificial environment. It's like, I mean, my husband's a drummer, and he spent a lot of time playing in bands, and we would go down, and, you know, one band or another would be playing in some lonely little club down by the village or whatever. And so people would come to see that band. They would stay for that band, woohoo, and then they would leave when that band was done. Yeah. So whoever was left in your audience is, you know, your friends, and the band that is coming on after you, maybe a couple friends trickled in early, but that's it. And so that bringer environment is just, well, of course your friends are going to whoop it up for you because they want to be supportive, but the other friends don't.
What friends are you hanging out with?
Well, I actually, you know, I laugh when I come to
no,
your
you're
shows.
Very supportive. You're very supportive.
Yeah,
you're,
you know.
But then, too, if you bring more people, if you get a good turnout, you're going later in the show.
Oh, you're headlining.
Yeah.
To try not, and sell you not headlining. Yes. The poor schmuck professional comic.
Right.
That's the headline, but yeah.
Yeah, but
God
whoever
you
brought
bring 15 people. Wow, we're going to give you a primo spot. You're going to go on 29th. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
But I love trying to get people. I lived in New Jersey, trying to get people out into the city on Thursday at 6 o'clock. That's your set, and I'm like, what? I can't get people to come out here on a Thursday night at 6 o'clock. They're at work.
And whoever you do,
yeah,
that's Thursday. Well, next Tuesday, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Those people are not coming again.
That person's not coming again, especially,
you know what I mean,
after the miserable experience they treat them to.
Sitting through 13 other people who are just learning to be comics themselves, and some of them who never will be. And, yeah. Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible.
Everybody at work thinks I'm funny.
So what I wanted to ask, so you've been doing this about as long as I have. I feel, and Joe and I have talked about this, audiences have changed. They react.
Yeah.
They react to things differently.
Yep.
I don't think they're quite as hip, quite as intelligent, have the attention span. Not every audience. Of course, the ones who talk to me after the shows and said they like it, you guys are the best. You know that.
Well, that's the wheat. The chaff just falls out.
But I feel like it's harder if you want to write at a better level. If you want to be a better comic, it's harder to do that now.
You know what? I agree with you. I used to be more of a storyteller. Now, you can't take time to set anything
you got
up.
You got a story in your act that you do fairly often. It's a pretty long story, and they stay with you.
I am much more streamlined than I used to be or ever could. Because, like, I think the key to what you said is the attention span.
Right.
Because everything is in the palm of your hand right now, literally, instantly. Go on the internet. We don't have to have a debate about a fact, a historical fact, or the way we remember something. We can Google it instantly.
Why would I do that when I can just tell you it's fact and you should believe me? I mean, that's where we are. Why would I need verification? What America are you living in?
Right.
I have a meme which clearly proves my point. Look at the pictures and the big font. I don't understand why we're having this argument.
With a font this size, I should not be questioned.
Exactly. Yes. Somebody make a meme of that.
With a font this size, I should not be questioned. That's perfect.
Doesn't it sum it up now?
Yeah,
that does sum it up. But, like, I feel like even, like, Cosby, you know, put aside the rape. You know, we all have our mistakes. But, like, I feel like a comic like Cosby would never be able to flourish now because it's all stories.
It's all stories, yeah.
I love the classics. I like listening to classic comedy and like, for example, Bob Newhart.
The button-down
mind of Bob Newhart, I find hilarious. He would never get through in a club. I mean, he would change. He would evolve. He could do a bit about Abe Lincoln having an advertising man in New York telling him how to be appear presidential, but it would sound so different.
We have to fill it with more punchlines.
Oh, yeah. Boom, 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 boom. You know?
Do you find that audiences are getting more easily offended? I mean, you're not a very offensive comic.
No, but you know what? The groans, which is just disapproval that sounds like gas.
I've never heard that before. I like that.
That's a Joe Bronzy original. I've said it to an audience before. That's just disapproval that sounds like gas. I have no time for that.
I feel like that should be on a shirt sold after a show.
You're sucking other people's enjoyment away. Why?
Yes.
To prove that you are moral? Get the fuck out of my comedy.
Well, you know,
show.
I did a show at some temple or something, some Jewish temple.
Hmm.
My parents were there, so I wanted to do well,
right,
you know, to make up for not finishing law school.
That'd do it.
Yeah,
show at a temple.
So I'm doing the jokes that always get left. I'm getting a lot of groans, and we hate groans.
Oh, yeah.
And a person comes up to me, like, oh, we really like the show. I'm like, well, why'd you guys groan so much? That's how Jews laugh. No, it's not.
No, it's not. Oh, my God.
I thought they were going to say, because we're Jews. I mean, or...
That's essentially
what they said. That's how we laugh. What?
Listen to me. First of all, political correctness came about in response to bigotry. It was the correction of misogyny or bigamy. Or bigotry, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what political correctness initially was. So in other words, it's not political correctness.
Wait, wait. So I can't just grab my secretary's ass?
Exactly.
Hold on. I don't like this
world.
That's
not political correctness. That's just, hey, be decent.
Yeah, don't be a dick.
It's just a decency movement.
What I said when we've talked about Trump, I was like, well, he's not being politically correct. I go, you don't have to be politically correct. There's a line between not being politically correct and not being an asshole.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You could be decent. Be honest. That's what I'm asking.
You could say what other people are thinking, but you don't have to be an asshole about it. Like, you can speak uncomfortable truths, but you don't have to go out of your way to insult people doing it.
Right.
Well,
wait.
We're not associating Trump with truth in any way, are we? Because that's another thing entirely.
No.
That's not an uncomfortable truth.
Fake radio show. Don't know what you're talking about.
That's
He's not
like,
speaking any kind of truth, whether it's uncomfortable or not.
It's sort of like when you try to put two South magnets together.
But Hillary.
You know?
Yeah. But Hillary.
Yes.
Nobody lied more than Hillary. I'm making the other argument.
But emails.
Oh, here.
Okay.
Emails.
You know sir, I'm making it because Joe's not here to argue this
emails
point.
About Benghazi.
I'll be playing the point of Joe right now. Let me bump into something.
You know what? Hillary was a politician.
Yeah.
Politicians, all by definition, lie. Got it.
I don't know if they all. I mean, to a degree, I think they all spin. They all spin.
Okay, if you want.
I think there's a difference between spin. Like spin is if like say somebody's wearing an ugly outfit. Go, oh, that's unique. I haven't seen you in anything like that before. It's quite striking. That's spin.
Okay.
For being a dick is, wow, that shit's ugly. And lying is, wow, that's a beautiful outfit.
My outfits are always the best.
My outfits are
fantastic. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, an old dear friend who I have not seen in far too long just sat down across from me. Hello, Mr.
How you
Curry.
Doing, Joseph? How you doing, pal?
I'm good, man.
Good to see you. Good to have you here.
You know, we were talking about stock lines before
on the show. And you came to mind. No.
here we go.
So I say to you in the great show business tradition, can I get you anything? Like a watch?
Yeah.
Well, here's the deal. Oh, here we go. Now we got to hear about the commute. We know Joe's commute. He got out late.
No,
it's fine.
Got out late, yeah.
I understand. You're here.
Listen.
We're happy.
You came from Long Island.
We're happy Joe's
to
here.
Be here and entertain. That is a schlep. That is a trek. That is a miserable journey. Appreciation. Thank you for
Thank
coming.
You. Thank you. See, isn't that nice?
Sure. He doesn't have to deal with you every week. We're happy you're here.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, we'll deal with the Trump stuff later on. We were just talking a little comedy. We veered into Trump. Probably my fault. And I was giving your defenses of him.
Since
you weren't here to do it yourself.
a half-assed version of what you might say.
Well, I said, but Hillary and the emails and the servers and, you know.
I was saying that political correctness originally came about to stop people who were bigoted or misogynistic. It was just decency. It was just behave properly, right?
Right.
Now, political correctness is hijacked by anybody who doesn't like the way you're expressing what you're expressing and say that's not politically correct. Or the other side is, oh, you're being too politically correct. It's just nonsense.
It's an excuse.
Yeah.
It's an excuse not to listen and not to consider your fellow human beings.
Right.
So I have no patience for people. And when people groan in an audience, they don't even really know why they're groaning. They don't know. They think they should disapprove because somebody's going to judge them if they don't. If you're that much in your head, you're not enjoying the comedy show, let go.
I do think there are some people that actually think that's the way you're supposed to react. They're wrong. That's not the way you're supposed to react. But, I'll get people, well, I'll do a joke. I'll have a point about something. It's a punchline. And they'll agree. And I go, yeah, normally I like applause, but a rounding rouse of affirmation is
right,
too. I get that. People don't know how to behave.
Oh, I get that, too. It's like, oh, I agree with what you say. You're very funny. Great. Where the hell were you? I don't even have the meet and greet line.
You know how you could agree?
By applauding.
That would be a wonderful way to do it.
Laughter here and there.
Sure.
During the course of the show would be nice.
The root of it. It's people don't know how to behave in public anymore.
Yes, absolutely right.
And
absolutely right.
Watching a performance, there are other symptoms of that, not just the groaning, not just the, oh, yeah, that's true. No, focus. We're laughing now. We're not nodding and agreeing because you think there's a political point to be made. Like, people don't know how to behave in public. They don't. There were, I'm waxing nostalgic here. Back in my day, fellas dressed nice.
There's nothing better than a shiny nostalgic. So there you go, wax
you know
away.
What? If you sit there and you take a senior citizen that says, "Well, back in my day, men wore jackets and ties," and I sit here as somebody not raised in that time and go, "I don't want to wear a jacket and tie." You know what? I would put on a jacket and tie in every restaurant I ever went to if it meant I never had to look at somebody's cracked feet while I'm eating a meal. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like those rules, yes, which were too much in a sense,
yeah, yes,
prevented me from dealing with disgustingness that I don't want to deal with. I'd like to go back to those rules, even though they're too much, to not have to see sandaled feet in a restaurant.
You, if you watch the old George and Gracie shows, George is wearing a suit wherever the hell he goes.
Oh, that was all. Yeah.
The suit doesn't even come off when they're at home.
I know. leave it to Beaver. Like, Ward was always in a suit. Guy gets home, he's hanging,
that's
he's wearing
true.
A
sometimes
suit.
Sometimes he had a sweater.
But still,
on,
yeah,
the on the weekends when he was going to play with the boys.
Yeah.
That was loose. But a tie under the sweater, right?
Yeah.
I don't, shirt.
But the pajamas were neck down. To
walk out of my kitchen in my drawers. I don't come out in a shirt and tie.
It's a different time. But, you know, yeah, people go, well, you know what? It was a more civilized time back then. And maybe that was part of it. Maybe we'd be a little nicer if we were. Because when you do wear a suit, you do feel better about yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, besides the uncomfortable aspect of it.
Yeah.
You feel like I look good. Because a suit's supposed to hide things and tuck things.
And mm-hmm, even drinking, right? Even when you're drinking, if you drink in a suit, you are much less likely as a guy, as a young idiot, to get in a fight with somebody and wreck your suit,
yeah,
than if you're wearing,
yeah,
a T-shirt,
yeah,
and flip-flops. You know what I mean? It,
yeah,
doesn't matter.
A T-shirt and flip-flops. Then you should be having your ass kicked.
you really
but,
should.
But, yeah, it's just that, you know, there's no class anymore. You know, and we're
in
not
behavior or dress.
Yeah, and we're not calling out each other on class, because if you do, oh, you're shaming. You know, not shaming. I mean,
there's a time and a place. I mean, when people are going out, we don't have to call people out for wearing suits unless there's a dress code that says wear suits.
Right. You're right.
You're right.
Mine was an exaggeration.
Right. I mean, we're not the fashion police.
Yeah.
I mean, people. We're a much more casual society now. But, and I think that's seeped into how we express ourselves to each other now. We're much more, we don't, like, you would never talk about religion and politics before.
Right, right.
You know, that was kept at home. Now we're very free with that.
Because everybody, yeah, because now with Facebook and, you know, Instagram and Twitter, everybody's got a platform, and you're absolutely right. The only time, when I was a kid growing up, the only time I've ever really heard about politics in my house being told is when my grandmother and my mother discussed it, or when we would go over to my cousin's house, you know, my aunt, my mother and my
adults
uncle.
Are talking.
Adults are talking, but yeah, that's the only time, you know. My mother wasn't on Twitter. I like Nixon. You know, I didn't.
Hashtag definitely not a crook.
If we can find Nettie's Twitter handle, I'm sure she's fake news. I'm sure after the impeachment, it's still a witch hunt. If
hashtag no break in.
Yeah, right.
No break in.
Right. Right, exactly.
Fake Watergate.
Wasn't there then.
Hashtag original witch hunt.
Right. Wasn't there then, you know?
So, what we like to do when we have comedians in, is we relax, it'll be fine. You don't have to fuck Joe. It's an option, but you don't have to. No, well,
Joe's been fucked enough today. It doesn't need to be fucked.
No, just tickle the balls.
So one of the favorite things on the show, and they don't happen that often anymore, but sometimes they happen. A good old fashioned hell gig, a comic hell gig.
Oh.
So I'm going to play the little hell gig theme song. And then I'd like you to share one of your hell gigs with us. Are you cool with that?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Welcome to Hell Gigs!
Out of that. I think I even said that works out well.
So set the stage.
The stage is, I'm going to tell you about both the best experience I had leading up to a gig and the worst time I ever had on stage. They're the same story.
Oh my God, I love this.
I opened for David Brenner for 5 years. I had wonderful experiences with him. He took over Aspen when HBO left,
mm-hmm,
I think for only 1 year,
right,
to do a David Brenner's What's So Funny and introduce new up-and-comers, okay? He's so prolific, he closed every show. He did weeks, new show every time. He closed, and there were three beginners that would do 20 minutes or up-and-comers,
wow,
that would do 20 minutes in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Wow.
So, yeah, it was amazing. I don't even know how many shows he did, but they were all different. Brenner's shows for the festival were all different, and you hadn't heard him before, and you didn't hear him afterwards.
Wow.
So I was so excited to be a part of it. And at that point, he was interested in managing me. He's like, hey, why don't we see if we could take you to the top? Oh, this is it. I've made it.
Yeah,
I'm
really?
So
wow.
He flies me. I'm doing 20 minutes, I think. I don't remember exactly. I think I was getting, like, I was getting ridiculously well paid for if I got paid.
Oh, and you thought that's what comedy was like.
That's right.
That's adorable.
How long were you in at that time?
If I, 7 years, 6 years.
Okay, so you know the rug could still be pulled.
Yeah, no, but he still had the shine on him.
Oh, I did. I did.
But still, you know the rug could still be pulled.
I didn't have my full voice as a comic.
Right,
I really
didn't
know myself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they fly me to Aspen, which is gorgeous. They put everybody, the other comics, the other two wonderful comics. One of them was Whitney Cummings.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
They put them in a hotel suite. David says, well, why don't you stay at my cabin? Well,
wow.
Yeah, sure. Mm. You know? So I'm having an amazing time. The festival took us out to a five-star, five-course meal.
Wow.
Amazing dinner. And what I got paid for that 20 minutes, I would be happy today to get paid for a weekend anywhere.
Oh,
right?
Wow. Yeah.
So this is amazing. And it's at the Wheeler Opera House, which is a staggeringly perfect venue for stand-up comedy. David took me to the show to see it ahead of time. I've just got handed my third bottle of water. I'm going to pee.
Yeah. don't look at me when you say that.
Okay.
It's not that kind of gig.
So
that's my material.
It is. So I'm so excited for this. We go to the Wheeler Opera House the afternoon before. David's like, you got to see this. All the seats, 500 seats are all on top of you.
Wow.
It's perfect for comedy. The ceiling is not like, boom, opera house. It's down kind of, it's the perfect venue. You know what I mean? Like, I walk on that stage, my nipples are hard. This is going to rock.
You're in showbiz.
Now, yeah. David says to me, I want you to go first, you, then the two female comics, and then me. And I said, David, you want to manage me. You don't want me to go first. You want me to have a better slot. You know, he had some industry coming to see the show. Daryl Hall of Hall & Oates was also there. I don't know what he had to do with comedy, but he was there.
Yeah.
So I said, don't put me up first. Put me second or third before you. He said, no. I want it to be, you know, start bookend the two men with the... Okay. He said, they're hot. They're ready to go. Okay. So I'm walking up to the stage.
Is there an MC?
No.
So you're just going out there cold.
Well, all right. So this is what I'm told. I'm the director of the festival.
That would be a great book for any comic. This is what I was told.
This is my book.
Or a band, or any entertainer, band, rock, comedy.
This is what I was told. That's great, Jeff. So I was told the head of the festival, the president of the opera house is going to say a few words. He's going to make some remarks and then bring me on. So I'm walking up the stairs from the dressing room, and there are windows that look out. It is 5 minutes to eight. We go at 8 o'clock. This is a union house, right? So I'm walking up, and literally, I'm not exaggerating, nobody's seated. It's 500 seats. Not in the balcony, not in the bottom. It's 5 of 8. So I go to the stage manager. We're holding the house, right? We're gonna hold the show. He says, no, we're going to go at 8. I go, no, nobody's seated. I can't go out and nobody's there. And he says, no. First of all, they come in quickly, but I forget his name, the opera house guy. He talks for a while. Now, you all know, you're veterans of comedy for a while. If I could go back in time, I would kick myself square in the balls. And then when I stopped retching, say to young Joe, you tell him you're not going out until 8:15 at the earliest, till you see that people are seated. That's what you tell
them. Yeah, but none of us have the balls to do that, especially in that position.
Not then.
No.
Not then. Yeah. Would I do it now? Yes. I tell them, you're going to introduce, the spotlight's going to come on, and nobody's going
to
come out.
But wouldn't the move be to go to David Brenner and have Brenner tell them?
And I'll tell you why no. Is because David, and I had learned this quickly, David did comedy for a year and hit on The Tonight Show.
Oh, wow.
So as far as paying his dues and learning the craft in the school of hard knocks, David didn't have that experience.
Right.
So almost, well, really, his entire career, except for his first year, when they said, ladies and gentlemen, David Brenner, the crowd was ready.
Right.
You know what I mean? If they weren't seated when they said David, they'd have come running down the aisle. You know what I mean?
And it's almost like with the crowd coming in, it's almost like when you're emceeing, they're really not paying it. They're getting their drink order. They're settling in and stuff like this. And this is going to be, almost like an audition set.
At 8 o'clock, they played music, and the director of the theater went out, and his remarks were as follows. Folks, welcome to David Brenner's What's So Funny. Our first comedian is Joe Bronzi.
That's not even a remark. That's not an intro.
That's not even a welcome.
No.
So I walked out on stage.
Now, how many people were there? Were there at least some?
Were
seated.
Out of 500, when I took the mic out of the stand, I counted 6.
Oh, God.
Were they up front?
The back doors were open. No, they weren't even up front. The back doors were open, and people were kind of milling there. They came in fast. They came in fast. It took 11 minutes of my set before a crowd was seated.
How long were you doing?
20.
That's too much time.
Oh, my God.
That's too much time.
20 minutes.
Done more than half your set.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I still feel, looking back at young Joe, I feel very proud that I got him to laugh. I organized them as a crowd by the end of 20 minutes. It was brutal.
Oh, God.
It was miserable. I had such high expectations.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I was so excited. And 11 minutes were pure hell. You know what I mean? It was bombing. It was just bombing. Nobody's listening.
Because you're trying to grab at straws to get some semblance where you could set up shop.
It's not really bombing if nobody's listening.
No, it's not.
It's
prattling on, and it's not really bombing because it's not like it's full and things aren't going. You're trying to grab at straws, trying to get something going somewhere with what you were given.
But
you know.
We can. I think there are legitimate justifications, but fellas, when you're on stage. And nobody's laughing, whatever the reasons.
Oh, my God.
You feel as though you're bombing.
Yeah.
And well, you would have done for a few groans.
Oh. Really? Amen. So I really did. I got them laughing, organized as a crowd. I handed it off to Whitney. Mm-hmm. Such a gift. Because that beautiful room was seated, a little warm, ready to go. She blew the roof off the place, and I walked off like Snoopy.
And the man who was supposed to watch you, he couldn't recognize what you had done?
No. You know, the one who was supposed to watch me, the main industry, was David Yeager, who was David Brenner's manager back in the day when he was Seinfeld, right? Uh-huh. The same thing, man. Like, he picked up David right after David popped, and, you know, he said to me, I think you need more stage time. I said, I think I need an audience.
Good
for
you,
know? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but that was, you know, I was a little confrontational. That guy wasn't going to manage
me. He didn't know shit, though, either. I mean,
I didn't feel he appreciated the situation.
No, he didn't, because it's an untenable situation when nobody's sitting down.
So that was my saddest hell gig, man. And it should have been a rocket ride that I'll talk about my whole life, about how great it was. And it was for the other two comics.
Oh, God.
You know? Oh,
so
awful.
Whitney took off after that?
Uh-huh. Yep, and I'm trying to remember the name of the very funny comic who was after her that I was on with. I think it was Renee. I knew her name. I liked her very much. She was a little much for the Aspen crowd. Like, she was talking about, she was a lesbian, and she was talking, comparing being a lover of women to a lover of wines. You know, that's a touch oaky. that's her line. Very funny. And the Aspen crowd kind of went, no.
I fear the Aspen crowd would have liked wine.
Well, yeah.
Surprising.
So, yeah, man, that's my hell gig story.
The chat room is feeling for you, and Lisa says, it wasn't the comic's fault. I blame the front of house people.
Lisa, yeah. I love you.
Yes. But Lisa's very lovable.
But that's
absolutely very lovable.
That's what time when you get handed a bill of goods. I was working up in Albany one time, and it was MC, me, Middling, and Keith Purnell. And we were told by the booker, we got to work clean, extremely clean, blah, blah, blah. The MC goes up there and he starts talking about dead hookers and this, that, and the other. In a high school auditorium with high school kids in with the parents, two of the parents stand up and go, I have my daughter here. I don't want to hear this. How dare you? Blah, blah, blah. Then another parent stands up.
You know what the response to that is? What type of hooker material would you like to
hear? Yeah, funny. Well, meanwhile, the lady running it goes to take him off and goes, well, thank you very much. Thank you. Joe Curry.
Oh, God.
And once again, doing 20, 15 of it to get them back. With Keith Parnell laughing at the office.
You know what you had riding on the line? He had a career riding on the line. You had another gig to scale riding on the line.
But that's just fucking a big break. When you get a bill of goods, and what it basically was this. I wasn't having, this is my point, I wasn't having a bad gig. I just got put into a bad position,
right,
like you know, and it sucks.
Our friend Kevin Downey Jr., who you know,
yeah,
calls it the physics of comedy, man. You can be really great at your craft. You can be a great writer. You can be focused and healthy and sober and ready to go. If there are elements, physics of comedy against you,
yeah,
you can only do what you can do, man. And you just, you walked into a shit show and did the best you could.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have mattered what level of comic you were if you didn't have fame to batter the door down for
yeah.
you. They're going to have the same problem you did.
Exactly. Yeah, because there are nights that it's like pulling teeth, but I'm saying to myself, and you'll say it to yourself, I'm running on all cylinders here. I'm doing aced up at the same cadence and the same,
see,
you know.
That's the difference between you and me. You run it to yourself. I fucking tell them. And you've seen me do it.
That this isn't working out the way you want.
I go, listen, people, I know this shit works. I've done other firehouses.
Yeah.
he yells at the audience, do better.
That's what I do. I said, do better. This stuff works.
Oh, my God. At a roast, I teased another comic once. I said, you know, you're all familiar with one of his famous taglines. Fuck you, that's funny.
that is funny. Yeah, my tolerance for bad audience has waned over the years. But it does whip them into shape, because I don't think audiences know what to expect. And I do talk about uncomfortable things. So I think immediately, like, oh, what are people going to think? And so I need to go, it's okay.
See, I used to, when I was coming up, I was taught, oh, there's no such thing as a bad audience. It's your fault. Wait a minute. Hold it. I believe, I'll tell you where I am now. You can debate this with me. I don't think it's ever the audience's fault, but the circumstances of the gig, the physics, the lighting, the sound, the way they're sat, what happens around the show. You know, let's have a moment of silence for
no,
our,
no. Sometimes it's their fault. Brother. Sometimes they're a bunch of drunken douchebags. Sometimes they're stupid.
But
sometimes they're uptight. Yeah. Sometimes it's the wrong comic for the gig. Sometimes it's their fault.
Wrong comic for the gig. Yeah. Not their fault.
No, not their fault. But the other things. Sometimes they suck.
Drunk. Show is scheduled wrong. Not their fault.
No, we can't schedule around their liver.
Seating is a very important part of it.
Sure.
There are only two clubs that I know that I've worked that have people that know how to seat the place. You know, yeah. A lot of them don't.
That's why you got to sell the place out.
I'll remember that. Next
eliminate
time.
The options.
There was a club owner in Atlantic City who had a room down by the boardwalk. Made millions of dollars. Mm. Foot traffic was great. Low ceiling. Crowds were packed in. It was a hot little room. He didn't understand why it worked. So he took his millions when they redid the casino and built a theater. And it was the worst designed comedy room I've ever been in.
Wow.
High vaulted ceiling, so the laughs were lost. You could never feel like it was packed.
Right.
He put mirrors against the front wall, so the audience was self-conscious. One, they saw themselves.
Oh, God.
And two, the lights, the stage lights, always spilled because of the mirrors and lit the room bright as day. So nobody feels anonymous, like they can relax, have a good time.
Right.
Yeah.
And then he had a backdrop behind you that was like the Partridge Family bus threw up. And so distracting, nobody could focus. And he had a section of the audience for no reason that was stadium seating. He didn't know what made the other room work. And this room became his money suck and drove him out of business,
Packed in tight, a good sound system, low ceilings. That's what you need.
That's all you need.
Good lighting. That's what you need. But sometimes the audience sucks. Like you do a corporate event, they suck sometimes.
Yeah, but then when you do a corporate event, you're talking about probably all the factors you just said is what you need, you don't have, plus their boss is there.
No,
they don't feel comfortable in front of.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, but they're still the audience. I like this one. We thought you were fine. We don't know what's wrong with the audience. You're the fucking audience. You're the audience. I'm the performer, but you're the audience.
There are some gigs that you know going on. I did a political fundraiser about maybe 12 years ago, and the person that
thank you for your support.
The person that booked it when we got there goes, it's going to be an awful gig. They're not going to let. They're just here to kiss everybody's ass. So I was closing it out. So a couple of people went up there. The guy that was running it, he went up there, nothing. The middle act went up there. She got nothing. She comes off. She goes, oh, you'll go up there and turn it around. I go, no, I won't. I go, Seinfeld could trot in and get his ass handed to him. No, because they were not. And sure enough, I went up, and it was a teeth-pulling festival beyond compare. But you knew, you know, and we get done. And then the guy to book to go, see, I told you this was going to suck.
Yeah,
is it
just convention.
Sometimes audiences suck.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
At this point, it's very rarely my fault. Honestly. No, I'm saying that for real. Because we've done this long enough. We know how to do this. We know how to present the material. Mm. We know how to make an audience like us. We know how to make an audience listen to us. We know the jokes that we're on a paid gig. We know the jokes that we're bringing to the table. The vast majority of them are tried and true. We're not going to make rookie mistakes.
Right.
We're not going to open by calling the audience a bunch of C's and see what happens from there.
Yeah. You know what? What I agree with you, but does this happen to you? Because this happens to me. Sometimes when the circumstances are good and everything's right, it will bother me. It doesn't bother me if it's a shit gig or a shit circumstance. There's nothing I can do. I don't lose a wink of sleep, man. It doesn't bother me. The next day I've forgotten about it. But if I feel like I left something on the table,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
That'll bother you, yeah.
That bothers the shit out of me.
But
you know, it doesn't matter. I went on stage 3 weeks ago. I had a fever. That really felt god awful. They were a hot crowd. They were so happy to see the show. They were so receptive. They made it so easy for me. And while I'm on stage, I forget I don't feel good.
Yeah.
But I was off.
And yeah, but they don't know. I've been on stage sick, and you're just hoping that actually the audience is good enough to carry you through it.
Yeah.
you know, where they're so good that you don't have to.
Oh, so you blame them, and now it's their responsibility.
No, I don't.
I don't always blame,
but I'm saying sometimes it's their fault.
Yeah.
Listen, sometimes it's the comic's fault. Listen, sometimes I get on stage. It doesn't happen that much anymore. But you go, ooh, I got on at the wrong place. I'm not connecting with these people, and it's going to be a struggle all the way. And even still, you go, I don't know what I did wrong, but they're liking everybody else, but they're not buying into whatever I'm selling, and it happened from the word go. It doesn't happen a lot anymore.
Yeah,
but it happens.
You know, it's funny. I was doing a show. I was emceeing a show in Pennsylvania one night, and we was doing two shows. We were doing the main show. That was the 8 o'clock show. And at 8:20, we had a show downstairs for a benefit for a soccer team. We start the 8 o'clock show. I go up first. These people were amazing. Phenomenal. Had a knockout set. Get done, go downstairs to the benefit for the soccer players, go up, pulling teeth, getting absolutely nothing.
That is so emotionally brutal.
I get done. Well, thank you. Let me bring up your middle act. I go back upstairs to do my middle spot. Destroyed. Joey went back downstairs 5 minutes later to do the same material. So it's the psyche of a room. Upstairs was an 8 o'clock show. People were planning all week to come, have a great time, hang out. They were in that part. They were in that. And Joe, it's one of those amazing crew. You want to bring them everywhere.
Yeah.
Downstairs was a benefit for a soccer team. And parents are there. They don't want to be there. It's a Saturday night. They're there for the, you know, because they have to be there and stuff like that. And it was like pulling teeth. And it was pretty much for all of us involved in that show that night. So it's amazing what goes on in that show.
I had to learn to give the second show audience permission to not be as good as the first show audience,
right,
or not as or as fun a time, whatever you want to say. That was hard for me, man. Like I prided myself on listening and adjusting and being present.
Mm.
But for the second crowd, I wasn't as much. If they weren't as hot as the first, it irritated me. It bothered me. It's like, oh God, all I was cruising and high as a kite. Now I got to work.
And right.
I had to like learn. And it took years.
Yeah.
No, different crowd. Let the good go, just like you'd let the bad go. That was hard for me.
All right. Let's take our first break, and then we'll come back and we'll do some horrible news stories on the break, because it's like Nazis and KKK and asbestos. It's gonna be an uplifting time.
But Spike Lee has some good KKK for us, so
I
it all balances
that. Yeah,
out.
Yeah, exactly. So on the break, we got new music from Rex Stax featuring Irvin Fame with the song Her Vice. And you can learn more about them at khb-music.de. Don't go anywhere. Joe's going to stay with us. Got a lot more show to do.